Pets are a wonderful part of our lives, and I'm betting that the animals that are your companions are special members of your family. But just like human relatives, when our pet's behavior is unexpected or maybe hard to understand, it can be stressful for everyone, including our pets. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to talk about a whole range of pet behavior today and also focus a bit on separation anxiety with our guest, Dr. John Sirabassi. He is a doctor of veterinary medicine as well as a board-certified veterinary behaviorist. He's founder of Chicagoland Veterinary Behavior Consultants and is the co-editor of the book titled Decoding Your Dog, The Ultimate Experts Explain Common Dog Behaviors and Reveal How to Prevent or Change Unwanted Ones. And Dr. John Sirabassi, welcome to the program. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Larry. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's going to be a lot of fun. When we talk about separation anxiety, how would you define it? What do we mean by it?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty self-explanatory term. I kind of like it for that reason, but it refers to symptoms reflecting anxiety problems in dogs that occur when the dog is separated from what we call a primary attachment figure. And most of the time, a primary attachment figure just means, you know, one of the owners, someone that the dog is really bonded to and has a difficult time separating from. And the symptoms that we usually see are things such as destructive behavior that's usually directed towards exit points like windows and doors. We can also see destruction towards personal items. Some dogs will eliminate bowel movement or urination in the house when they're alone. And then some dogs will drool quite a bit, and that's a really key one where there's a lot of salivation when the dog is by themselves. And then vocalization. A lot of dogs will just make sure that the neighborhood knows that they're there.
Yeah.
Comes around, and so a lot of barking, whining, wailing, that kind of thing. Just a real distressful sound.
So, are certain pets, or maybe pets in certain circumstances, more likely to experience separation anxiety?
Well, we think that these dogs tend to be have a tendency to be more anxious in general.
Okay.
And then something in the dog's experience or environment tends to trigger the anxiety along the lines of developing a separation problem. And that can be just in terms of the dog not being around people very much and then becoming really attached. Or maybe things change where the dog is used to being around people and then lifestyle changes. Somebody moves out, someone passes away, job schedules change, such that the dog now has to deal with being left alone, whereas previously they didn't have to be. But overall, the underlying issue really is an abnormality in how the dog handles stressful situations. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where some people say, well, you're going to give your dog separation anxiety if you don't leave it alone. And that's really not true. I mean, you can't really spoil a dog into separation problem. There has to be an underlying abnormality for a dog to react this way. So if you want to keep your dog in your bed and you want to pet it all the time and it's a normal dog, go ahead and have a good time. That's why we have dogs, right? But for these special dogs, which are just really not equipped to handle separation like that, that increased attachment can make the problem worse because now the dog's just not able to handle that separation.
You know, Christy online in Phelps on the phone has something that relates to this, so let's get to her. Christy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you, Larry, for having the speaker on. Thank you, Dr. John, for showing up for us. We appreciate it very much. I'm sure it's going to be a popular subject. I have a year and a half old dog. She's Border Collie, Black Lab, Bloodhound, and Leinberger. I got her at 4 months old from an older woman who I'm sure didn't feel like she was abusing this dog, but I don't believe this dog was ever out of the woman's home at all. There's a big pile of dog poop outside the house, and the house smelled pretty bad. And again, I don't think she felt she was abusing the dog. When I got her home, I had to tip the dog crate over to get her out. Submissive pain for the first month. Very, very, very sweet dog. It's a year and a half later. I've pucker trained her successfully. She's in a dog crate during the day when I work 8 or 9 hours. I have someone come midday and let her out of the dog crate. She goes back in. about a month and a half ago. I wanted to try her out on her own for a couple of hours, and it ended up costing me $800 at the Mosinee Emergency Room Clinic in Mosinee, Wisconsin. It's a possibility she got into some drugs, but we weren't sure, and I couldn't take the chance on it. She was out for approximately 2 hours and took some things off the counter, which she had done previously on shorter times outside of her dog crate. But this time, she took out a screen that was 4.5 feet high off the ground near my bed and was working on trying to get out the window, which unfortunately was the highest window in my house. Any other window, she would have survived. But she didn't get out. I got her to the emergency clinic. It was a happy ending, but she seems to have some severe separation anxiety, and I've never had this happen with a dog. I can only attribute to maybe the first 4 months of her life, and she really does not like men.
And she but it was a year and a half later, or at least a year later, before she exhibited this behavior, right?
Yeah, because I had her in this dog crate for quite a while.
I got it. Okay.
Before I decided to let her free. I was hoping a year would go by, I could let her out on her own.
Okay. Dr. Siabasi, what do you think?
Well, obviously the episode where you had your dog out of the crate and gave it a trial to be in the home alone for a period of time is definitely reflective of a dog with separation anxiety. We have dogs who, leap out of really high windows and get injured really badly. And we lose some dogs because they're so panicked. The worst case scenario I can give you an example is real quick is I had a Shih Tzu who had separation anxiety and was biting so hard on the crate to get out, it actually causes one of its eyes to dislocate or come out. And we call it proptosis. So,
oh, my gosh.
There's a lot of stress. Some people say, this is just a bored dog. Well, these are not bored dogs. These are dogs that are really panicked and in a really state of distress. And that's reflective of your dog jumping through the screen and going out a window. A normal dog wouldn't do that. So those symptoms are definitely reflective of separation anxiety. But I think even before then, you're displaying a dog who just doesn't handle being out in public very well and is fearful and frightened in multiple situations, even when you're at home with it. So specifically, we're seeing a separation problem. But generally, we have some dogs who have what we call generalized anxiety, where they become nervous and anxious in any but the most severely restricted situations. And that's I often tell my clients, they're focused often on the distress it's causing them. But if you really turn it around and look at the distress that the dogs are going through, you have to really understand the quality of life that these dogs are going through is not very good. And, part of my motivation or a large part of my motivation of doing what I do is not only to help people, which is really important, but also to help the dog, because these dogs are really suffering. And if you can imagine yourself going through life with this type of level of anxiety and put yourself in the position of these dogs are, it's just a horrible way to have to live.
Can we go through or how do you work with a canine companion to overcome separation anxiety? Are there kind of steps that you follow?
Yeah, specifically for separation anxiety, the things that we try to do behaviorally, first of all, is to reduce a little bit of the dependence that the dog has on the owner being present. So we'll ask the owner often to sort of ignore a lot of the attention-demanding behavior that dogs have, looking to get petted all the time, bringing toys up to play all the time. So in dogs with separation anxiety, it's a way for them to cope with the stress when the owner's there. The difficulty is when the owner's not there, those coping mechanisms no longer applicable, and they suffer greater degrees of anxiety. So we ask the owners, hey, let's prepare this dog for you not being there, and let's just not be in constant contact with the dog. And that's not a promotion for the internet service, constant contact. That's a bad joke. I'll move on now. And then the other thing we say is, let's get the dog prepared for you to leave. Now, a lot of time owners will want to go through a whole routine of talking to their dog and taking it out for a walk and taking it out for the last elimination, playing. And so what you're doing is just building up this dog's level of excitement and emotion, and then you walk out the door. And now they're left with, how to manage now after this emotional charge, and now the owners are not there any longer. So what we ask the owners to do is spend a good half hour where they really don't have much contact with the dog at all and allow them to adapt to the owners not being there. And then on the other side, when they come home, is not get real crazy with greetings. so the dog can learn to relax a little bit, you know, would not be so caught up with the owner being home. Now, there's some other things we do as well, but I think the other point of this is the recognition that these are abnormal behaviors that the dog's displaying. This is not a training problem. There are some things we can do training to help, but unless you address the underlying anxiety problem, you can't train a dog out of separation anxiety. So in many of these dogs, at least the ones I see in my practice, and these are the ones that are, you know, having really significant problems, we need to deal with the underlying anxiety problem medically. Now, whether that's using some over-the-counter products like pheromones, or there's some nutraceutical-type products that can help in mild anxiety cases, or in more significant ones, looking at some pharmaceutical help to try to manage the anxiety.
Yeah. And the whole process, how long does this process take? I suppose it varies a lot.
It does. I mean, there are some dogs that we can help within a few weeks, and other dogs we're looking at several months. And unfortunately, in some dogs, they're so anxious, or it occurs at such a later point in their life, or it's been going on for so long, that we fail to make progress and really make a significant difference. But the majority of dogs, I would say, on average, 2, 3, 4 months of work, and they tend to really do pretty well.
Well, there we go.
And it's one of the more treatable behavior problems that we have in veterinary behavior.
Oh.
Okay. Am I still on the line, Larry?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, a couple of quick things, a good and a bad. I've done exactly what you said in that I throw some dogs in their crate, say, see you later, I'm out the door, not a big deal. But unfortunately, coming home, I've been a little bit more rambunctious than I need to learn to do. I will fix that now. She's gotten 100 times better than she was when I first got this dog. She's a lot more social. I've put her in situations with myself, with her, and people that she doesn't know, gotten people to pet her. And she's gotten a whole lot better, especially with men. She's not quite as afraid of men as she used to be. So mm-hmm. I bike with her every day. We go biking a lot. So, you know, she's been exposed to a lot of different environments with me at her side.
Wow, that's excellent.
Yeah, very good. Sounds like you put a lot of work in. She's lucky to have you.
Yeah, I mean, that's for sure.
And this is no knock on the majority of the people, but most people won't go to that level in managing dogs in this situation. And again, this is not a saying something bad about people who choose not to pursue these behavior problems, because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. But for those who make the commitment, I have nothing but the utmost respect for people who can go through the effort that it takes to manage dogs in this type of a situation.
Yeah. Christy, thank you so much for calling. Very much appreciate your call, and good luck with your dog. I don't have a dog, but I have two cats. And
cats,
believe me, separation anxiety is not a problem with my two cats. But yeah. Do you ever see it in cats?
In cats, yeah, it does occur. It's not nearly as common in cats as we see in dogs. And that's not because cats are not social. I mean, people yeah. who have cats recognize that cats are social. They're just not in the same way that dogs are. And so they do show some of separation anxiety, and one of the ways it presents in cats is we start to see elimination problems outside the litter box that occur specifically when the cat is alone. So it's very specific in that situation, but it's not nearly as common as we see in dogs.
Talking today with Dr. John Sirabassi, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine and board-certified veterinary behaviorist, and has served as president of the Chicago Veterinary Medical Association and president of the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior. Our guest today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. Right now, talking with Dr. John Sirabassi about understanding your pet's behavior. And I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Questions there, or even if you've got a photo of your pet, that'd be kind of fun to see as well. Love to hear from you. And we do have a link to Dr. Sirabassi's organization, Chicago Veterinary Behavior Consultants, on my Facebook page. So if you want to go and learn some more about that, about his group, why, I hope you'll go there. And you have quite a few things, quite a bit of information on your site, Dr. Sirabassi.
Yeah, we try to. I mean, it's not meant to be a replacement for seeking appropriate help, whether it's a training problem and finding a good, reputable trainer, and we do have some links to some of those as well. But if you do have something significant, then your first step is checking with your veterinarian. A lot of behavior problems can have a medical component, and so checking with your veterinarian, ruling out medical issues, and then asking them for proper referral, whether it's to a local trainer or if it is a behavior issue, not just a training issue, then finding a behaviorist in your area.
We had a Facebook question or comment from Candy. Can you talk about the benefits of crating these types of dogs when the behavior or when the owner leaves? Is that a good thing, obviously, or not?
Okay, I assume we're talking about a dog with separation anxiety.
Right, yes.
Right, right. So, that's an individual question. So, in general, most dogs do not respond well to crating if they have separation anxiety. Most of these dogs tend to get more reactive, more anxious, and we've had, like I mentioned, you have some really significant injury to dogs in their attempt to try and get out of the crate. And we'll see often people come up with all kinds of inventive ways of trying to prevent the dog from getting out of the crate, chains and bungee cords and all of this type of stuff. So if you've got a dog who's that stressed in the crate, you need to consider other options. And that can be giving the dog more space, but then we've got some dogs, when you give them space, like our collar, things get worse. And so while you were starting the initial phase of treatment for separation anxiety, we look for the least problematic method of managing the dog. That could be using a crate if the dog tolerates it better than being out, or leaving the dog out, or in some cases taking the dog with them to work, or boarding the dog while we're trying to get the behavior plan underway. So it's really an individual thing based on each individual animal. There's no one right answer to that question.
Mark in New London has a question. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We've got an 8-year-old Australian Shepherd that we adopted through a rescue service. About 6 months ago, she was in a puppy mill for the first 8 years of her life as the primary provider for Australian Shepherds, unfortunately. She's very energetic, very smart dog, loves to go for walks, but she has no interest in playing with toys, no interest in chasing a ball or a frisbee or anything. We've been working with her for about 6 months. Had a little bit of a breakthrough last weekend when we were out in the backyard with her throwing a ball back and forth between my wife and I. And finally she ran over and picked up the ball, threw it around a little bit, ran, dropped the ball, looked at us as if to say, "There, I can do this, but I'm not interested in doing it," and she walked away from us. So I'm wondering.
Probably a very good interpretation of what was going through her head at that time.
That's what it looked like. So is it a case of where she just never learned how to play because of the environment she was in, and there's still an opportunity to develop that within her, or what could we do? Because she's very playful when she's just chasing us around, and again, she's very energetic and very well behaved.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. I think if a dog went that long with a kind of a substandard environment and didn't really pick up on normal interaction between people and dogs, and they don't develop this type of play response, I think that's, you're right on the money, that I think that's likely the origin of the problem. And so a couple suggestions I would make is, number one, I would say focus on what she really likes to do and what she does well. Not all dogs, even dogs who have a normal upbringing, play. But they have other activities that they enjoy doing. And I would, focus on that primarily as something she enjoys and improve her, her quality of life in terms of play. If you still want to work on it, yeah, you can do that. Using some type of reinforcement method. So find something she enjoys. Is she food motivated?
A little bit. We got her a treat ball. Where the treats come out, and every once in a while she'll push that around.
Yeah, I mean that's a good response. There's a large number of different type of treat items. There's Kong toys, and then there's Premier Pret products have a variety of toys that you can use that are food dispensing toys. But you can also find something she really likes as a treat and use that as a reinforcer for play. So in the example you gave, you know, if she just happened to, you know, engage in some type of play activity for even momentarily, and you reward that, and then that can help build on her interaction with you with play. Clicker training is a really great way of training using a positive reinforcement method, and you can incorporate that as well. So don't give up on it. I mean, like I said, focus on what she really likes to do, but, you know, be persistent. And I mean, you've made progress already. Just, you know, just keep at it. It's a slow process.
Wonder if a behaviorist, an animal behaviorist who has a dog and would bring the dog to a session with Mark's dog and just observing that dog in play, if that would, does that ever work? Does that ever help?
You know, dogs do model, but, you know, model other dogs' behavior. I think it's more likely to occur in a younger dog as opposed to an older dog who's been through this pattern of behavior over a period of time. So it's a decent idea. I'm not sure how much success you can get, but heck, you know, what's the harm in trying, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you're not doing anything negative, you know, as long as there's no aggression issues between dogs with Mark's dog, and that can make a, you know, problem situation worse. But if it gets along well with other dogs, it's definitely worth trying.
Mark, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Mary in New London a chance to join us. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Well, hello. Thanks so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. What's on your mind?
Well, I have two rescue cats, and one I've got, I got her maybe 9 years ago. I think she's about nine. So she was maybe 4 months old when I got her. So, and she's a nice kitty. She's quiet. She'll come on your lap if she wants to, that type of thing. She doesn't like to get picked up. Then my daughter wanted a cat, and I says, okay, you know, I waited a long time, and we finally got another rescue kitty. And we did keep her in her bedroom and separated for quite a few months. And then as I was home, I would let the cats be out together more and this sort of thing. But still, even after all this time, so we got her probably around December, our cats still don't like each other. And I just don't know if there's something more I can do to get them to be friends, because they do hiss at each other quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right. Do you want me to go ahead and respond?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. I was thinking about my own two cats and situation where I had two cats, not the current two cats, but the it was a year before they got to, they would live together.
Yeah, I mean, the most, in my experience anyway, the most problematic situation is when you have an adult cat who's resident in the home and you're trying to bring in another adult cat into that home. Now, again, there are plenty of circumstances, and I'd say the majority of circumstances, where that works well. But there's a good number of times when you're bringing an adult cat into a home where with already a resident adult cat, where it can be more difficult. And oftentimes it is just a matter of time, that it can take sometimes several months to maybe even a couple years before they adapt to each other. And that's assuming no one's getting injured. So if you can recognize that if one of the cats is just signaling and you're getting hissing and growling, and it doesn't progress beyond that, you know, where that warning is heated and you know, they each go their own way, and then, you know, really there's not a lot that you have to do other than maybe just doing some positive things with both cats when they're in each other's company. You know, maybe if a cat likes to play with the that one cat when the other cat is around. If treat rewards are something that the cat likes, you know, canned food or some palatable treats, you know, only offer that when the cats are together. That can sometimes help. But if there's injury going on, then you're really going to need the help of a qualified professional, you know, veterinary behaviorist to help work you through that.
Well, there really isn't any injury. They do bat at each other once in a while, mm-hmm. and then they just kind of walk off.
Yeah, I mean, that's cat stuff. You know, if you look at, cats in the, if you got feral cats who are out and about, you know, they tend not to, you'll have, especially male cats, they'll tend to keep distances from one another. Cats have, you know, kind of a feeling of personal space, And each cat has a different diameter of personal space. And when that personal space is invaded, they're going to signal to the other cat that they're not comfortable with that distancing. And most of the time, the other cat will get the message, and they move away, and they create a comfort zone again. And that's probably what's going on between your cats in the home. And as long as that spacing is available, that you have enough room in your home that they can continue maintaining space between each other to each of their likings, then it probably is not going to progress to anything more severe than what you're seeing right now.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say don't worry about it, but what you're seeing is normal cat behavior in a relatively confined space.
Yeah.
I wouldn't add another adult cat to that home, though.
No.
that would be my suggestion.
Okay.
Because another way cats will show stress is sometimes you'll start to see urine marking going on, and you don't want that.
No, you don't. Thanks, Mary, for calling. Dan in Partyville. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We've got two rescue dogs. One's a German Shepherd Collie mix, and the other one's a German Shepherd Lab mix. They're both rescue dogs. The problem was with the Lab. We got him when he was about 2, and he's 9 now. But he can smell a thunderstorm coming hours away, and then when it finally gets here, the thunder and lightning, he just starts shaking and shaking. And he does not like high beeping noises, say, from the TV, and we have to be careful about our own smoke alarm. So if the battery goes low, we take the battery out right away. He's got the flight thing going down. He tries to get out the door, and he tries to run upstairs. We do use Rescue Remedy, and we have a thunder shirt, but I still feel so sorry for him. He just shakes, and he's just so afraid. So what can we do?
What do you think, Dr. Sirabasi?
Okay, well, so a couple things. One, thunderstorm phobia is often, we can often see it associated with other problems as well. So separation anxiety, thunderstorm phobia, and then generally noise phobia all seem to go together in a lot of dogs, not all dogs. So be aware that, this can be, for your listeners, if you see one problem like separation anxiety, it's not unusual to see something else as well.
He does not have separation anxiety at all.
That's good. Count your blessings. Very good.
Yeah, for sure.
So the the thing here that you're dealing with is that it's not just a thunderstorm issue; it's just random noises. And the problem with not only storms but especially with random noises, you have no control over it. So sometimes people will talk about doing desensitization, where you gradually expose the dog to the noise involved, like a thunderstorm or your smoke alarm or things like that. But when you have so many noises that trigger this type of anxiety response in the dog, it can be a real problem. So, I don't want to harp on meds here, but when we're dealing with this type of anxiety that is random and not predictable, without controlling the underlying anxiety problem, it can be really difficult to manage this type of anxiety and the display that occurs with thunderstorms. So, medication, whether it's using something like Rescue Remedy in a mild case, or using pheromones or some of these other nutraceutical products like I mentioned, that's a good place to start. Thunder shirts, they're a good thing to try. Most dogs don't respond well, but it's definitely worth trying. And then if that's not working, then there are some anti-anxiety medications that are used. And then when we use it, we typically are using something on a regular basis, on a daily basis, and then adding an additional medication as sort of an event medication where you're anticipating storms being present, and then medicating as well. In the old days, veterinarians would just give medication when they think a storm is coming along. The problem with that is that if you miss it or you don't give the medication soon enough and the dog experiences the anxiety, it's just sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy for the dog that, storms are awful because they're experiencing this anxiety, and our goal is not to allow that to happen. So that's why we use a daily anti-anxiety medication and then add something on board afterwards. So if you're seeing something that significant, then I would definitely consult with your veterinarian and either something they're comfortable with working with or referring you to someone else, I would definitely do that because we can give these dogs a lot of help. And if it means medication to improve quality of life, it's a definitely something you want to look into.
There you go. Good luck, Dan. Thank you for calling. Anastasia in Mesomany, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm calling because I have a 3-year-old mixed breed dog, and he, I guess, shows anxiety, kind of freaks out when we have people over to the house. He's fine with them out in public. He's fine if they come into the house. But once we have people over to the house, like, say, for Thanksgiving, and there are a few people that he doesn't normally see around the house, he paces and kind of yips and whimpers and almost does, like, herding behavior. He's fine if everyone will sit down, but, you know, someone gets up to go to the bathroom and it just starts them all off again. We tried essentially doggy downers once, and it just made a very drunk-looking dog with the same behaviors.
So, Dr. Sirabasi, what do you think?
Well, it's good timing because I just finished an appointment before I got on the phone with you. That pretty much mirrors what this caller's dealing with.
Okay.
So we do see dogs, and again, you know, in my practice, what I'm seeing is not training problems. These are dogs that are not having an issue with, you know, not sitting or their recalls are bad or they don't stay or that type of thing. That's not what I see. I primarily are seeing dogs who have problems with abnormal anxiety responses, and they're displaying in a variety of ways. And the problem that the caller is having is very, very typical. You know, these dogs who are so anxious, the last thing they want is change. They're most comfortable with things being stable and not changing. So when you have guests at the house, a lot of times they'll adapt as long as the guests stay put. You know, don't move. That's all I'm asking is just don't get up and move. And when they move, that means things have changed and anything's possible. And as a consequence, they often will turn to using aggressive behaviors in order to try to manage the movement of the guests. And if you got a dog with a herding background, a lot of times the way they respond to try to accomplish that is to use herding behaviors. So there's a variety of things you can do. The number one, if you've got a large group of people or you're entertaining or you've got people who can't take direction or people who are moving, you know, quickly and suddenly, then sometimes it's best just to give your dog a safe place to be during that visit. But if it's more of a manageable situation, one of the things we'll tell people to do is, first of all, ignore the dog. So we ask guests not to talk to the dog, not to look at the dog, don't try to pet it, don't try to make friends. Sometimes it's people who consider themselves dog people who are the worst because they can't leave the dog alone. And, you know, and so we need to give the dog space, give it time to adjust and adapt to people being there and finding out if these are okay people or not. So just giving the dog some space is really a big one. Secondly, you know, if people are going to get up and move around, I usually ask the people to tell their guests, you know, let me know when you got to get up and do your thing. You know, when you got to hit the restroom, let me know. And then give me a chance to get my dog off to the side and then ask it to do just a few simple commands that maybe you've been practicing regularly throughout the day so that now we give the dog something else to focus on other than worrying about what that guest is going to be doing. Okay, so it's sort of a coping strategy or a way for the dog to adapt as opposed to relying on using aggression to adapt to movement by the guests. And that sometimes can be really, those few things can be really helpful in helping a dog manage a stressful situation. If that's not enough, then again, you know, again, we're dealing with underlying anxiety issues, and these are abnormalities that these dogs have inherited, and sometimes using meds in that situation can help. But at least trying some of the behavioral steps first, and if you're still running into a wall, then the reason you're running into a wall is not because you're doing things wrong, but you've got a dog who's emotionally so reactive and nervous that they can't really process what you're trying to do behaviorally.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling, Anastasia. Appreciate your call. We have Joan in Minocqua up next. Joan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I heard the call about the cats just after I placed my call, and I learned a lot from that. I have a similar situation. My older cat died, and I brought in a new cat from the shelter who had been a stray. So I have two females. The new one is under a year old. She's just been spayed. She's fierce. She's real bright and alert, and I guess that's what was attractive about her. But she's backed the old cat, the the resident cat into my bedroom, and she will hardly let her come out of there. And this has been a couple months, and it's gotten a little better. I used to feed them at either end of the house. Now I feed them within sight of each other at my bedroom door, which isn't exactly the place I would choose, but I guess that's I'm making progress. My concern is, and I'm willing to give this time because it has gotten better in that they just hiss and spit, but they do look at each other a little bit. The old cat's getting kind of fat because she doesn't get exercise like she used to. And I could let her out a sliding door to, she has a cat door, so she could go out there and use the sand outside as their litter box. But as it gets colder, I'm going to have to install, I'm afraid, a litter box like in my bathroom because I have to have some place for her. Do you think this is ever going to get better?
What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the odds are it will improve. The question is, will it improve enough to allow your, you know, your original cat to be able to move about freely within the home, which is what you want. I mean, if she's willing, if she wants to move around and she's being prevented from doing so, you know, then that's a problem. Now, some cats, you know, they'll in that situation will do really well. They like being in a separate room. You know, you give them a litter box, you give them food and water, plenty of toys, give them perches to go up and down on. You visit them regularly throughout the day, and they do great. And a lot of them, it's much better than them being out in the main part of the house and not wondering, you know, when they're going to get, you know, incoming is going and they're going to get nailed by the other cat in the household. So sometimes isolation or confinement or, you know, reduced area can work really well for the cat who's being abused. But if that's not the case, then you are looking to increase movement around the home, then a couple things you do. You're already doing a really good thing. We call that fancy name as food desensitization, which means they're only fed something really palatable when they're exposed to one another. Mm-hmm. And you start at a far enough distance away that they're not stressed by each other's presence. And the only time they see each other when there's something really good happening. And then gradually over time, as they adapt to a distance, you gradually reduce the distance. So that's a really great way of going about it. The other thing you can do is just swapping rooms periodically so that your older cat is not always in the bedroom and the new cat is not always free in the home. Just flip it around so that periodically they have access to each other's space. And it also is a good way to kind of swap odors from each other and have them adapt to each other that way. You can also use synthetic pheromones. There's a product called Feel-Away that we use in cats that can be used as a plug-in or as a spray, and that can help cause some relaxation as well. So those are really can be really helpful ways of approaching things, but it does take time. It can take quite a while in cats, and cats tend to be really reactive, and they can this aggression imprint can be pretty long lasting between cats and the household. So you just kind of have to hang in there, and like I said, as long as nobody's getting hurt, there's no reason why you shouldn't continue to work on it.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. I feel so blessed that we have two cats. The current two cats, we had one for about a year and then got the second one. And for some reason, for stupid reason, I let the second one in contact with the first one right away. And they hit it off immediately.
Right.
And they were the best
That's
of
good.
Friends, never have had a problem. They play together. They love each other. Two male fixed cats.
Yeah, we've got a woman that works for us that has like six cats, and everyone she's introduced by just putting them together, and they do great. So it's tough. And then you get people who do everything, by the book in terms of isolated first and all, and those cats, you can never get them together. And I think sometimes it's all of that is overridden by the cats.
We are talking today with Dr. John Sirabassi, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. We have a link to his group. It's called Chicagoland Veterinary Behavior Consultants, and it's on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I hope you'll take a look at it. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we visit with Dr. John Sirabassi. who has served as president of the Chicago Veterinary Medical Association, is co-editor of the book Decoding Your Dog, The Ultimate Experts Explain Common Dog Behaviors and Reveal How to Prevent or Change Unwanted Ones. And Dr. Sirabassi, that I think the here's a book title that tells what's in the book.
We tried. That was the goal.
That was the goal.
We're going to call it 100 New French Recipes, but we figured that might be a little misleading.
Well, I like that. Has the book done well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, much better than we had anticipated.
We really
are pleased with the way it's responded. And, you know, it's been a resource for pet owners and also for veterinarians, you know, in terms of what to recommend to their clients. And you know, as veterinarians, and myself included, we've got minimal education and behavior when we're in veterinary school. So we're hoping that, you know, this continues to be a good resource for veterinarians as well in learning some of the basics of animal behavior.
I was wondering, you're a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, and there are other certified animal behaviorists. I'm wondering, board-certified veterinary behaviorist, what that implies?
Well, first off, we're veterinarians first and foremost.
Yep.
You know, we've gotten our degree in our doctor of veterinary medicine degree. We've practiced, most of us have practiced in general practice. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of behavior issues have a medical component. And, you know, one of the things we're trained to do is to look at the whole pet. And, you know, if you have a cat who's eliminating outside the litter box, you know, we have the ability to verify that this is not a urinary tract infection, it doesn't have stones, and that's causing the problem, you know, as an example. So first and foremost, we're veterinarians. And then secondly, we're further trained in understanding animal behavior and being able to better appreciate when normal behavior becomes abnormal. And how to manage those situations. So, you know, I think we're uniquely qualified in that we do understand the whole pet, not just the behavioral aspect of them.
Yep, that's for sure. Sharon in Paddock Lake has a question for you. Hi, Sharon. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a 4-month-old puppy. He's a hound dog, a rescue, and he's doing great. We've taught him to ring the bell when he has to go out. He's in the bathroom. And he's doing fine at home, but we have all wood floors. And when we take him to other people's homes who have rugs or carpeting, even with the bell along, he will be playing and will find a rug and pee on the rug. We've noticed, too, when we walk him, he will not eliminate on the road. He pulls off to the grass, which we're fine with. But we just worry how we can work with him at home to realize that rugs are not for using for the bathroom.
So this is happening both in your home and then if you take him to other homes?
No, not at all in our home. We have the bell by our door. He's great at home. But when we take him to anyone's house who has carpeting or rugs, he seems to think it's okay. He will not go on a wood floor, ceramic, anything like that. It has to be a or carpeting, and I'm afraid we're not going to be invited.
Yeah, not with the dog anyway.
Yeah,
no, not with the dog. And we want to socialize him as much as possible because he's a good little dog. So how can we work at home with this?
Well, so he's not having actions on carpets at home. He's eliminating outside.
They don't have any.
No.
Okay, you don't have carpets at home. Okay.
No, we have
wood.
We have wood.
Okay. All righty. So I think, you know, the first thing is when you have an elimination problem like that is the main issue here is not to give the dog the ability or the access to whatever it is that they're eliminating on. So when you go to visit someone, I would strongly recommend keeping the dog on leash.
Okay.
If you give the dog the opportunity to just kind of roam around and make its own decisions, it's obviously decided that, you know, carpets are really preferable material to eliminate on. And, you know, whether it's similar to grass and that's been a surface that the dog has gotten used to, I don't know. But if it has access to carpet, it's going to trigger the need to eliminate. And again, I want to back up and say, I'm assuming you've had your dog looked at by your veterinarian to make sure there isn't
urinary problem going on. No urinary problem. He can go in his crate. He will last in his crate for 8 or 9 hours at night with no accidents. So it's definitely not a medical issue.
It doesn't sound medical. So the other thing, some dogs who are nervous visiting a new home, Dogs will what we call experience submissive urination, where they'll dribble urine because of nervousness. So, you know, if you see other signs of your dog being nervous, and that could be, you know, trembling, tail tucked, the ears down.
None of that.
Kind of being hunched over.
He's very social, loves going to visit new places,
right.
People.
And this is not happening when it's, you know, when they're, you know, playing with the people that you're visiting, right? They're
not at all.
Going crazy. Okay.
Not at all.
Sometimes we'll see excitement urination where you see dribbling because the dog is so excited they lose control of their bladder. So it sounds like, number one, you want to make sure that your dog doesn't have access to carpet. And then get into a regular period of taking your dog out when you're at your with your friends. And if you want to bring a bell along, I mean, it sounds like your dog is used to and is trained to a bell. You know, if you have a little bell you can take and put it near the door where you would typically go out at your friend's home, and then as you're, every, hour or two, just go out, ring the bell, and then walk out with your dog, that would be a way of trying to bridge between what your dog is used to at home and help it to adapt in this new environment that it's not really sure, well, what am I supposed to do to let them people know that I have to go? You know, use a bell at home. Where's the bell here, right?
It's basically something we really can't work on that much at home because he's got it down at home.
Correct. That is
right.
Right. Because, you know, dogs are, they don't, like I mentioned, they don't generalize well. So what they learn in one environment isn't necessarily what they're going to carry over into another unique environment. So if you kind of go through, and I would encourage you, if your friends will let you, visit frequently and then just, you know, get the dog used to that routine in their home so that it resembles what's happening in your home.
Good advice. Thank you for calling, Sharon. Appreciate your call. And let's turn to Stan in Merrill next. Hi, Stan.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Hi, Doc.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I don't have a problem yet with my dog. I just bought him or adopted him yesterday. And he's a border collie, Brittany Span. What's that?
I say congratulations. Very good.
Oh, thank you. He's a border collie Brittany Spaniel mix, and he's been through several owners, and they've all given up on him because of his activity level, which you can imagine. There's nothing wrong with his dog. He's so nice and so sweet. But I guess what I'm wondering is, have you got any suggestions on steps I can take to hasten any bonding process? I want him to want to be by me, and that's sort of a trait of border collies. And I'm worried he may have lost some of that while shuffling through owners.
Right. Well, you know, the first thing I would say is look at activities that the dog likes to do. So options can be obviously, you know, regular walks. If you have an area where you can play, that'd be great. Do some basic training, and then look at your schedule, and I would say get into a regular routine. So, okay, this is when we can play during the day. This is when we can train during the day. This is when we can go on walks, and then engage in those regularly. And then anything outside of that time frame, you know, I would try to be low key. You know, let the dog come to you, as opposed to trying to force the issue. Sometimes forcing what you feel you want to do will sometimes cause the dog to react in the opposite way. And if you have kids, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Let it be his idea and let him come to you, and, you know, as opposed to trying to force things. But look at activities. You know, those are the basic, you know, border collies are, you know, high energy dogs. They're perfect dogs for canine athletics, things such as agility, dock diving, doing some competition obedience. There's a variety of really great activities that dogs love to engage in. And, you know, try them out and see what your dog seems to like. And then it's a great opportunity for you to bond in an activity with your dog that they really like. And I think, you know, especially with a border collie, it'd just be a really great way to develop a relationship.
There you go.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and have a good day.
Yep. Take care.
And good luck with that new dog. Linda in Hartford, I believe. Your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a 4-year-old Siberian Husky that we've had for about a year and a half, 2 years. She was a rescue. The guy that had her before us, she was really bad with separation anxiety. We thought we had a pretty good home for her because I'm home pretty much 24/7. However, we've been trying to work with her where we can try to leave her, and there's no way we can leave her without taking her in the car with us. She will get bloody paws if she's in a crate. The former owner had tried keeping her in a kennel in the basement, and she tore up the kennel fence trying to get out, broke a tooth off doing that. She just gets really hyper. And after we'd had her for quite a while, I tried to take her and put her in our bedroom when I left one time. You know, it was just her and me for the day. And I had to leave for about an hour and a half, and I put her in my bedroom. She had music on. She had a dog crate in there in case she wanted to go in. She always sleeps in our bed, so she's really comfortable in there. I had a couple of Kongs for her, a dog bone, a doggy puzzle. I mean, you name it, she had it. And I came home and couldn't get through the bedroom door because she had torn up the carpeting. And, you know, we have taken her to doggy daycare, but that gets a little costly when you have to leave her to go to a doctor appointment or something like that. And we'd like to work with her so that she would be able to accept it, being alone. We've used, or the former owner used a Thunder shirt. He said that didn't work. He had her on Prozac for a daily thing every day, and we finally weaned her off the Prozac because we didn't see a difference in her except that she acted like kind of a dopey dog.
You know what? You've got a serious situation here, and we're gonna ponder that. Dr. John Sirabassi will think about it. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us on the Ideas Net, and then we will be right back. Stay with us. We're enjoying a conversation with John Sirabassi today. He's a doctor of veterinary medicine, as well as a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, founder of Chicagoland Veterinary Behavior Consultants, and is co-editor of the book Decoding Your Dog, The Ultimate Experts Explain Common Dog Behaviors and Reveal How to Prevent or Change Unwanted Ones. Dr. John Sirabassi, thanks again for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me, Larry.
Well, you know, we had Linda from Hartford on the line just before our newscast, who outlined a very serious separation anxiety issue with her dog.
Right, right. I mean, she basically summarized what we talked about in the beginning of the show, so it was a very, very good case to talk about. But so just to kind of recap what we had discussed earlier, is that, you know, separation anxiety is a condition that often has underlying inherited abnormalities in terms of excessive anxiety responses, and it manifests itself when the dog is alone or perceives that it's alone, and we see destruction, excessive vocalization, elimination, and some drooling. And when we manage it, you know, we look at things behaviorally by teaching the dog to be able to survive on its own without responding to every little demand for attention, ignoring the dog for a good half hour before departure, ignoring it when they come home so the dog has time to relax before they interact with it. I think the caller says they use things like Kong toys and food dispensing items, and that's a good thing to do, making sure you remove them when they get home so the dog associates that with being left alone and hopefully will see being left alone as a positive because it gets some things, some positive things such as, you know, food rewards and that sort of thing. But ultimately, when you've got a dog who's this serious and it's injuring itself, we need to address the underlying anxiety, and use of anti-anxiety medication can be really important and make the difference between success and failure. And I know she said that they had used medication. They used a generic form of Prozac. It's called fluoxetine. And, you know, things to consider is that different medications can be helpful in different dogs, so sometimes it can be a trial and error approach. Also, dosages change, so sometimes, you know, what's initiated as an initial dose is not sufficient, and it doesn't mean the medication is not appropriate. It just means we need to adjust meds, which is, you know, same thing that happens when we deal with psychological problems in people.
Sure.
And then sometimes we use multiple medications to manage some dogs who are really severe. So I wouldn't give up on it. You know, find some help, someone who's comfortable in managing difficult cases of separation anxiety and is comfortable with managing medication as well.
And Ashley in Madison has a question for you. And let's go to Ashley. Hi, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello. Hi, Ashley.
Hey. So I have a mama cat. We adopted her last year, and she was pregnant at the time, which was a lot of fun. But we got her spayed after some time had passed after the pregnancy. And ever since then, she's been kind of licking the area around where the incision had been made, to the point that even months after the surgery, she still had this little bald spot on her tummy. And it was fine. It was stable. It wasn't getting better or worse until a month or two ago. We noticed that she's getting additional little bald spots from that licking in other areas on her abdomen. And we've tried switching to a higher quality food in case there's some dietary component. We tried a pheromone collar and the pheromone plug-in, and we really haven't seen any improvement. We were wondering if there's anything else that we could try to help her with this.
And I'm sorry, how old is the kitty?
We think she's probably 4 or 5. She was a stray when we got her.
Oh, okay. Remind me, how long have you had her then?
Since last January, so a little better than a year and a half.
Okay. All right. So the technical term for what you're describing is pruritus, which means, you know, kitty feels a little bit itchy and results in hair loss, and we call that hair loss alopecia. So there can be several reasons for that, and, you know, it's really common for people to focus on a behavioral cause. You know, people will say, well, you know, cat's bored, or there's what we call compulsive disorders in cats, just like in people we use the term OCD or obsessive compulsive disorders. And that's all definitely possible. But there was a study done a few years ago by Dr. Gary Landsberg who looked into cats who excessively lick themselves like that and cause skin issues. And it turns out the majority of those cats have problems with medical problems, and often those medical problems are allergy related. So cats who have allergy issues to environmental issues, like this time of year, ragweed is really pronounced, and we've got lots of problems with dogs and cats with ragweed allergies. In the summertime, we see grass, and in the spring, we see tree pollen. And then some cats do, you mentioned food, some cats have food allergy issues, and it's not a quality issue, it's more of a matter of what the particular protein the cat might be allergic to. So, what I don't want you to do is zero in on this being a behavior problem. I would suggest, you know, going to your veterinarian and, you know, mentioning, hey, could this be an allergy problem that we're dealing with? And there are things that can be done. There are food trials. There are medications that can be used to manage allergies. And we do that as a trial basis to see if there's an improvement. And if, you know, they go through all of this approach and we don't see any improvement, then the behavioral aspect becomes what we call a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning we exclude all of the other possible causes, and then we say, oh, apparently we do, this is a behavioral problem. And then it's a matter of trying to keep the cat occupied in other activities, get involved in positive play. Some cats we do need to use anti-anxiety medications, but first we just try and engage it and, you know, improve its environment. Good play, lots of perches, self-play, interactive play. So there's a variety of things you can do. But the vast majority of cats, it's really a medical problem. There's an underlying allergy issue, and it may have been triggered by the surgery, but the likelihood is there's some underlying allergy problem.
There you go.
All right. Good to know. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for
good
calling.
Luck.
Yeah, good luck. Karen in Edgerton will turn to you next. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have an Australian Labradoodle, and although he has no separation anxiety when I leave him in the house for a half a day or whatever, when I board him at a very reputable boarding place, he won't eat, he won't play. When I pick him up, he won't acknowledge me. The next day, he's still not eating. So it's obviously very stressful for him, and you know, there are occasions I have to board him. Is there any way to deal with that?
Have you used just the one facility, or have you tried other boarding facilities?
No, just the one facility.
Okay. Well, this is not to say that, you know, you're going to a bad kennel or anything like that, but, you know, different kennels have different ways of housing their dogs and interacting with the dogs. So it might be worthwhile to try some other kennels in your area. especially if, you know, you find kennels that take different approaches. You know, some have, you know, the traditional cage type of setup. Others have more open type arrangements. So you might want to try different, and I would visit them first, and then maybe instead of doing a prolonged boarding time right off the bat, maybe do a trial boarding where you just do one night over and just see how your dog does in these other facilities and see if it does a little bit better. I mean, if it doesn't help, regardless of where you go, then, you know, it's boarding is probably not the best solution for your dog, and you may want to think about other arrangements like, having pet sitters come in, either, you know, spending their entire time with your dog in the house or just coming in periodically, or maybe bringing your dog to someone's home, and there are pet sitters who take dogs into their home, and it might be a little bit less stressful for your dog.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. possible. We have somebody come for our cats. It just comes every day when we're gone on vacation or whatever, and the person comes and plays with the cats, and it turns out to be a good experience for the cats.
Yeah, I mean, and these people who do take it seriously, I mean, they're in there are associations of pet sitters, and these, you know, these are professionals. This is what they do, it can be really a great choice for a dog who just doesn't do well in the traditional boarding environment.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Karen. By the way, you could join in, too, if you have a question or comment for our guest today, Dr. John Serabasi, as we talk about your pet's behavior. We've dealt a bit with separation anxiety, but really we've been all over the board today with kinds
definitely.
Of issues.
Keep me on my toes today.
Oh, man. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Dan in Wood County, appreciate your call. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. Doc, I got two little kittens about a year and 2 or 3 months. Brought them, one from a humane society and one from a neighbor that had to get rid of it. And I brought them in the house. I got two little boys because two little boys I understood needed to live in a gang, be a gang. And they both were there at the same time, within 5 minutes of entering the house. Everything's going good. I keep them inside because I've heard that it's healthier to have them inside than outside. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Inside all the time rather than in and out. And the other day, one of my cats got out. When the cat came back in, the other cat, he was out for maybe 2-3 hours. The other cat acted like he was a complete foreigner and something to fear.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a smell issue or what it is. What do you think?
That's a very, very, I want to say, common problem that we see. And one of the other situations where that can happen is if you bring a cat to like a veterinary clinic, and then you bring it home after the visit, and the cat who didn't leave, you know, treats it exactly like you describe as, you know, as a foreigner, like, where in the heck did you come from? And, you know, I think part of it is you know, cats and dogs, too, are very olfactory animals. They're really dependent upon smells and odors. And when there are unfamiliar, strange odors present, they can treat the other cat as if they've never seen them before. So I think that's probably what you're dealing with. We also see a condition in cats called redirected aggression, where you have one cat, you know, for example, looking out a patio door out in the backyard, another cat, stray cat, comes outside, and the indoor cat is all worked up, and at that moment, another cat in the household walks by, and the first cat just redirects onto that one, and it can get nasty, and it can last for quite a while. So, you know, what I would suggest is you can do a couple things. One, you can transfer odors, so rubbing one cat with a cloth and then rubbing the other cat with a cloth can help to kind of equalize odors. You can use a synthetic pheromone product, like I mentioned, Feel-Away can be something you can use, and that can really help quite a bit in getting them readjusted to one another. If they're consistently aggressive, keep them separated when you're not around. And then when you are around, bring them together. And like I talked to the other caller about, whenever they're together, give them something really palatable and tasty to eat so they associate that with each other. And that can be really helpful in allowing them to kind of readapt to one another. And plus time, like we talked about with a couple of the other cases, you know, just giving them a little bit of time to reacquaint with one another can be really helpful. And that spray, that Feel-Away spray, can really good as a preventative. So next time you're, like, if you're going to bring your cat into the veterinary clinic, you know, a little bit of feel away in the carrier, and you should always use a carrier when you bring your cat outside to, you know, mm-hmm. out to the vet. A little feel away spray in the carrier can really help calm the cat down for the trip, and then also reduce the potential of this happening when you get back into your home.
Oh, you know, I never thought about that for the just putting it inside the carrier. I'm going to do that because neither one of our kitties enjoys riding in the car in a carrier.
Right,
they meow the whole way. So
yeah, most cats don't like it. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Dan, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And I should say that I have had the same circumstance with our cats. Who are best pals. One got out for like 15 minutes and came back in. We got him back in, and it was like they'd never seen each other before.
Yeah.
And about an hour later, they were fine. You know, it took about an hour.
Yeah, yeah. And most of the time is the biggest healer. But sometimes that's not quite enough, and you know some of these other suggestions can be helpful.
Yeah. Dana in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I was calling because I wanted to thank you for talking with the previous caller about separation anxiety in her Labradoodle. I wanted to say thank you for recommending in-home pet sitting. I'm not going to plug myself, but there are...
Go ahead.
Well, there are pet sitters out there, myself, who actually... do only work with special needs animals who have separation anxiety or another reason why boarding is not the best option for them. And it is my life's work to learn about animal behavior and find the best way to get around these things that we may not understand, but we know that it's causing the animal stress. So thank you for plugging us. We really appreciate that. So, and
oh, you're welcome.
Also, if anyone has any questions about those special people who do that type of work, to talk to their veterinarian. Usually the veterinarians know those good specialty type of pet sitters.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and I'd like to just maybe take off on that a little bit and say, you know, it's not only just, you know, the pet sitters, it's not only the veterinarian, it's not only the veterinary behaviorist, it's not only the trainer, it's all of these people working together. You know, I don't have this fantasy that I am the ultimate guru on behavior. You know, I have a small segment of what I do, but there are people out there and professionals out there who complement each other, and I couldn't do my job without having these other professionals around. So it's cooperation, and this is true in a lot of parts of life, but especially in behavior, it's cooperation and getting the help of individuals who can address all aspects of a pet's problem, whether it's behavioral or medical, that really does the best chance of achieving the desired result.
Yep, absolutely. And, yeah, big shout-out to I've got two pet sitters, Carmen and Gretchen, have both come to the house and have been wonderful. And you're right, they're part of the whole team, as a matter
right,
of fact.
Exactly. That's, the team is a great way to view it. Yep.
Dana, thank you very much. Appreciate the call. Julie in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm so thrilled to talk to Dr. Tremasi and listen to his solutions. My dog, and I posted a comment on your Facebook page, I have three rescue dogs. They are all about the same age and about the same size, two males and a female. The two males I got at the same time about 3 years ago, and they were pretty young. One was 18 months, and one the vet. They were both vet guesses, but he said by the teeth he thought the one was about 18 months old, and he was a puppy mill dog and a real mess when I got him. And the other one had been an owner surrender, and he's about 3.5 years old. they both have separation anxiety, but in different ways. The owner's surrender, he whimpers. He's anxious, and if you go to a different floor, he whimpers a little bit and comes looking for me, and it's nothing terribly serious. The other one, he doesn't have separation anxiety so much from people, but from his buddy. They came out on transport together from California. I don't think they shared a crate, but they were on the same transport, and they came to me at the same time. And when his little buddy leaves the room, he fusses, and because the other one takes refuge in another room. And then when he reappears, my puppy mill dog is aggressive toward him. He tries to dominate him, tip him over, push him down to the ground, and sometimes even fight with him. But if he's not there, he cries and he fusses and he wants him to appear.
What do you think of that, Dr. Sirabasi?
Well, that's a complicated one. So, you know, as far as the issue of separation anxiety, people and dogs, first thing I would say is the majority of times the separation anxiety is directed towards people. And I'll have people who say, well, should I get another dog? And most of the time that's not helpful. The majority of the time, getting another dog just adds another dog to the mix and makes things more difficult and doesn't really help the separation anxiety dog. But there are exceptions to that. Sounds like you've got one dog who needs to have another dog around. But if you get the dog that's being aggressive, if I got that straight, you're saying that dog's whining and carrying on if the dog that it's attacking is not present, correct? But when they walk back in the room, we see some aggression occurring.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. So, this may sound funny, but it's not unusual to have the dog who's the aggressor be the one who has the anxiety problems. And sometimes aggression between dogs is sort of what we call out of context. It's not what we would expect to normally occur between dogs. There are normal cases of aggression where, you know, they're fighting over resources, you know, food or toys in the household. They're, you know, fighting over space or attention from the owners. So that's, while it's not a helpful thing to have happen, it's an explainable form of aggression between dogs. But when what you're describing, at least from the limited information you're giving me, it's very possible that the dog who's the aggressor is behaving in a way that's just not what we would expect from a dog. And the problem with that is the dog who's being attacked really is trying to behave in ways that dogs would normally behave in order to placate the other dog. And if the other dog is not being placated by the victim's behavior, it's really stressful for the dog who's being attacked because there's nothing for it to do. So my suspicion is that the issue is you've got an abnormally high level of anxiety with the dog who's the aggressor, and that probably needs to be addressed either behaviorally with a behaviorist or consider, you know, placement of that dog in a home where there isn't another dog present, where it's an only dog. So those would be the options that I would consider at this point. Again, I can't make a definitive diagnosis based on, phone calls, but that would be the direction I would consider having you go.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And Dr. Sirabasi, boy, the time flew.
My God, I was just going to say that. Has it really been an hour and a half already?
Yes, it's an hour and a half has gone by. It was such a wonderful, I hope you'll come back and do this again with us at some point.
As long as you ask.
I'd be happy to do it. Oh, it's wonderful. Great questions and great answers from Dr. John Sirabasi, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. He is the editor, co-editor of the book Decoding Your Dog, The Ultimate Experts Explain Common Dog Behaviors and Reveal How to Prevent and Change Unwanted Ones. And we have a link to his group too, the organization that he works with, Veterinary Behavior Consultants. So go to my Facebook page for that information. You'll want to take a look at his site. Tomorrow, we'll take a look at wildlife issues. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.